Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to Straight No Chaser on this Sunday morning. We're broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick. This is the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and we attended Occupy Big Food on Wall Street yesterday. Jack, can you play us a clip?
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna LaPay, and I'm so excited to be here, to be among all of us in support and with the people over at Occupy Wall Street. You know, I think we all can agree that our food system's pretty broken for the 99%, and it's working pretty well for the 1%. The CEO of Kraft Foods last year made 600 times more than the typical food prep worker who makes $9.18 an hour. So that's like the Kraft CEO is making something like $6,500 an hour. So we've got incredible inequality. We've got the same problems of, you know, deregulation and the commodities markets that made a windfall for the bankers and left tens of millions of people hungry. And, you know, I think that like the folks across the street, you know, things have to change, and it's not going to change just by us sitting around inside in our warm apartments. We have to come out into the streets sometimes. So thanks for being here, everyone.
And I'm Marion Nessel. I'm a professor at NYU, and I'm here in support of our wonderful students who've organized this. I was an undergraduate at Berkeley in the 60s, and I thought it would never come again, and I'm really happy to see it. So go for it, everyone.
I'm Mal. I'm a retired professor of nutrition from Cornell, upstate, and I'm a farm boy from Illinois, and I'm here to support you all.
I organized the event. I'm an NYU student. I'm here. I brought you all here. I'm sorry. Our food system is totally rotten. We need to fix it. We're going to keep doing these events. This is only the beginning, and I want you all to continue the momentum with me. The food movement needs to line up with Occupy Wall Street. We are inherently anti-corporate, and we're ready to fight.
We're ready to fight. Well, that was Erica Lade, who is in the studio with me now. This is Straight No Chaser. And we are talking about Occupy Big Food with Kristen Wortman, Erica Lade. Thanks very much, ladies, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, Kristen, you're a food writer, so your byline appears in the Huffington Post, Grist,
Civil Eats,
etc. And Erica, you're a student at NYU.
Yeah, in food studies.
So how did this happen? Tell me how this happened. How did you guys get together to organize this event, and what were the goals?
Yeah, I mean, it was really actually super organic in its beginnings, if I can pun already. So what happened was that I have been in food studies at NYU for a couple years, and I really started paying attention to stuff at Wall Street recently. And I thought, okay, this is like everything I do in my classes. We're talking about corporations and how they control our diets by building up their bottom line. And I said, okay, everything down at Wall Street is the same idea. They're controlling all of our money. They're controlling our lives by only fixating on their bottom lines. And I really wanted to bring food down to the discussion at Wall Street. And I thought, okay, I'm an NYU student. I have some clout here. I can make a Facebook event and see what happens. Kristen contacted me through that, and we just started, like, you know, kind of going for it and building up the event.
Yeah, it was really kind of serendipitous because I had just written this article that was on Civil Eats and Huffington Post, you know, why the food movement should occupy Wall Street. And when I saw Erica's Facebook page, I was so excited. And I sent her my article, and we just really joined forces to really bring some more attention to the deep connection between Wall Street and our food supply.
Absolutely. So what do you think the fallout is going to be? Do you think other people who are in the Occupy Wall Street area who are part of that whole protest are going to start glomming onto the idea that food is a big part of the issues that that we face in terms of fixing the system overall? Or do you see this as like a whole totally separate thing that will just have its own organic life, no pun intended, as whatever happens with Occupy Wall Street happens?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think sometimes people... that connection isn't super clear between Wall Street and food because it is so like purposely hidden from the public. I know Kristen can speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think, you know, when the 2008 financial crisis happened, everyone knew about Goldman Sachs and Fannie Mae, but no one knew about Monsanto, Cargill, all these huge corporations, and there's not that many of them, it's a handful, that really control the food supply. And so we want to really make that more visible to the American people. And, you know, it's so interesting because people think, you go in a supermarket and you see all these choices on the shelves, and you think, oh, wow, I have so many choices.
Exactly.
But the truth is, they're all controlled by a few companies. And it's this illusion of choice that's really there. And it's actually kind of mirrors the whole political system when you think about it, because we don't really have that much of a choice either in who we're voting for. They're all controlled by, you know, the same people. So
very true. They are all controlled by those deep pockets.
Right.
So since Occupy Wall Street doesn't have like a very specific agenda, do you guys have a specific agenda about how you intend to continue to lobby against these large corporations? What's the game plan?
Yeah, we definitely have a working agenda. In the spirit of the Occupy Wall Street movement, we want everyone to be able to contribute to that and be part of that discussion. But we consider ourselves part of the food movement, and that we see as like a push for local, organic, and sustainable agricultural practices. We also see pushing education in the schools as a huge part of our agenda, that meaning any idea about cooking, growing food, self-care, which has been completely eliminated from any sort of public education, and which is vital to a future in food and for our environment. We also really want to push the breaking up of monopolies and the breaking down of corporate rule of our diet. And by that, we have some more specific goals, which Kristen can speak to as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, the traditional routes for trying to make change, you know, going through Congress, lobbying, changing legislation, all of this has not worked, clearly. I mean, look where we've ended up, and we've been trying these things for the past 30 years or more in the food movement, environmental movements, and they failed. And that's what Occupy Wall Street is talking about. They're like, you know, we can't go through these routes anymore. We have to take to the streets, and we have to take matters into our own hands. So, you know, Occupy Big Food, similarly, we want to do that. And so, you know, we want to promote like a serious boycott of these large food corporations like Monsanto, Cargill. And we want to organize direct actions at their headquarters. We want to, you know, but we need to get enough people aware of what's going on in order to really create some real momentum here. So yesterday at the rally, one of the representative from the Union of Food Services Workers was there. And he's really supportive of Occupy Big Food, Occupy Wall Street. And that union has over 250,000 employees in the food service union. And he said, you know, these people have some of the highest rates of diet-related disease. And that's because they're eating all these, you know, industrial foods. They're not paid well enough to afford better quality foods. And many of them don't actually have access to these foods as well. So if we can mobilize these people and really align with groups like this and others, I think we could have some real power there.
In a perfect world, if you got Monsanto or Cargill or one of the other general foods to line up with your agenda of, say, sourcing locally or building regional, interregional transport systems or distribution systems, I mean, do you think that's plausible? Do you think that's going to happen? Mm. So if not, how are you going to okay, but that's the point. It's like, how, if they're not willing to change and they do control so much of the food system, realistically, what can the goals be then in terms of forcing them or trying to force them to make some sort of change in how they source their foods, for instance.
Honestly, we really are taking a more radical stance. We're not interested in them changing their ways. We're interested in them kind of just going away. Because
dismantling them.
We're interested in taking them down completely. Because
oh, my God.
All that they have done.
The end of the world.
No, I mean, honestly, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, how can we continue to, like, how can we ever, like, for example, support some more, a place like Walmart, which just says, like, oh, now we're going to bring in more organic food, and we're going to, you know, try to, you know, do sustainable practices and work with small farmers. But, you know, at the same time, like, all they've done is totally pare down the market for any opportunity for a small business to come in. They've completely treated their workers and given them no health care, no support, like, well, terrible
wages. They
just
cut their health care benefits by a substantial amount, but they do give them.
Okay, so whatever. But, I mean, all I'm saying is, like, these practices are inherently terrible, and it's, like, the bigger system of corporate social rule, which we're under, that is the problem. So I'm not willing to work with a corporation, to be honest with you. I'm willing to take them down.
But food distribution is dependent largely on companies like Cargill. So until we have an infrastructure that replaces that, what's the plan? Like, imagine tomorrow there was no such thing as Cisco.
Well,
what would you do? What would people do?
Go ahead.
The scary thing about that is, you know, these corporations that control the food system, and the fact that, you know, Walmart has like a quarter of the share of U.S. control over U.S. groceries.
Yeah.
And most grocery stores only have 3 days worth of food in their inventory.
So
basically,
what happens if Walmart has...
Something happens along their distribution route, and some, you know, these things can crumble. There's just no security as it stands anyway. We're like definitely at a point where we're likely to have these issues arise as things are now. So that's why we're at a point where we have to really take matters into our own hands and figure out alternate ways to get food to everyone.
It's not, I mean, the way you're phrasing it seems to be like you're asking what happens tomorrow if these corporations go away, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. We're going to pare down, we're going to support small, local, sustainable farmers, and we're going to work towards that. I mean, that's the goal.
But without some kind of government involvement, how can you fund the infrastructure necessary to create a regional network of distribution and processing?
That's what we need to
work
on.
That's $1 million question.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about that on this network for the last 2.5 years.
And right.
I've had so many people on to talk about distribution and sustainable practices and sourcing locally and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have Kathleen Merrigan, who paid great lip service as she came into the agricultural, you know, as the Undersecretary of Agriculture, who paid great service to the local and sustainable thing. And mm-hmm. I have yet to see one, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I have yet to see one major government initiative that supports regional infrastructure building.
No, you're
have
right.
Have you seen anything?
No.
I mean, I could have missed
no.
it.
Right, but also the government bailed out the banks. I mean, the whole point of, like, Wall Street is that, like, this fundamentally is not working on a, you know, on a bigger level than any sort of, like, one system with food, one system with banking. We're talking about late capitalism, which we've, you know, it's broken. Isn't working. We're talking about a bigger issue. So it's not something that you can just kind of point to A, B, and C. I mean, it's the system itself that's just completely, you know.
But the thing is we need literally probably millions of new farmers and millions of new educators and people cooking and teaching people how to grow these foods, procure these foods, cook these foods. So, you know, hopefully as a movement, we can get enough people together and start having these grassroots like moments where we're like, let's start new farm programs, let's start new education programs, let's show people how to cook. You know, this is what we can do
and
as a group.
Rely on private donations and venture capital to fund it. Is that what you think would happen?
We would love to get private donations.
sure.
I'm just curious. Like, for instance, I know Ann Saxelby brought this up in a recent program, but where are the entrepreneurs? Mm-hmm. Where are the venture capitalists? Why isn't anybody investing in a regional distribution network or a procurement and processing warehouse? I mean, where is that stuff? And I don't understand why, with all of the money floating around out there, and all of the people who seem to be paying lip service to this ideal, as well as, you know, the idea of, you know, better food systems overall, you know, nothing is really happening. And it's very discouraging to me. I mean, I really don't get why this is not moving along faster than it is. Now, do you think that this movement will export to other cities? Are you planning on bringing this up in other cities across the nation? Are you going to be flying around and create? Really?
Once we get the private donations, we will be
flying around. Yeah. No, we would. We'd love to. I think the first step in the proliferation of our specific take on this is that we focus on cities that are close to big ag corporations and big ag companies that, like, you know, for example, in Minneapolis, I have a lot of friends because I'm from Minnesota that are very near to Cargill.
Yeah.
And they are interested in doing direct action against Cargill.
Yeah.
So, for example, stuff like that. I mean, proliferating the movement in that way is really important. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And these communities are really affected by these large corporations, you know.
I mean, the runoff alone is making people sick. I mean, we're going on, you know, 50, 60, 70 years of this.
Right.
You know, enough is enough. Like, it's time to move on.
Let's take a quick break, Jack, and come right back with Erica Lade and Kristen Wortman.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area. And we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio. And we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairways. We're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio. And we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
It's the end of the world, and this is Straight No Chaser. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and we're broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick. This is the Heritage Radio Network, and I'm in the studio today with Erica Lade and Kristen Wortman. These two ladies were a part of the organizing team behind Occupy Big Food, which was a little adjunct rally that happened yesterday in possibly the worst weather I have ever experienced.
Yeah. True story.
And if anybody was tuning in at the beginning of the show and could hear that clip, you could hear the sleet and snow hitting the microphone.
The thunder.
The thunder in the background. It was apocalyptic. Yeah. There was really no other word for it. It was apocalyptic. And
what does it mean?
Exactly. I'm constantly saying it's the end of the world, because these weather events, I mean, why doesn't the media link those to the global warming issue?
Strongly correlated to industrial agriculture practices and devastation of the environment.
Thank you. Just what I was about to say, Kristen. Well, let's pick up the thread again about big agriculture out in the Midwest and organizing this movement farther out from the coastal cities. Because, I mean, let's face it, here in you know, the Northeast, we're all very much on board with this. And in California and Oregon and Washington State, they're all very much on board with this. But when you go into the middle of the country, outside of the big cities like Chicago and Minneapolis, I think there is a tremendous disconnect. And let's talk a little bit about the impact of big agriculture, about these systems that are so firmly entrenched, that do control so much of our food system, and how we're going to bring this message to a larger population that is not really necessarily all that interested in hearing about it. Farming communities generally are not interested in hearing this message. I'm just telling you from experience. I mean, I've been out, you know, been to USDA, you know, seminars and stuff like that. You get these big guys who have been working the same way for the same number, for, you know, X number of generations. And the idea of not getting a bigger crop, you know, per acre or whatever it is, you know, using these chemicals and whatever, they're not going to buy it. They need to make money. That's what they're about. And they don't see you know, they don't see that what they're doing is a bad thing. And I don't know how you're going to make them see that.
Mm. I mean, but aren't farmers getting screwed, really, basically, across the board?
I would say probably not.
Just small farmers.
Yeah, I think if you tend to grow row crops or are a small livestock farmer, you have a harder time because you can't, for instance, and this leads into that little discussion about futures.
Right.
For instance, a large company like Cargill, which is going to buy, or Smithfield. Oh, we have a caller? We have a caller.
Oh.
Do you want to put that person on, Jay? Okay, sounds good. Jack is giving it the nod. Hello, this is Straight No Chaser.
Hello, this is Harriet from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
And I want to say really right on here. And I think that I keep hearing what the message is that this is going to kind of be a parallel system. So when I hear you talk about how we bring in mainstream agriculture, how we bring in the corporations, I think, like you all have been saying, that the opportunity to do that has been given, and that much outreach has been given to people who are, we were hoping, would come into the fold and understand what the issues are. So the idea of creating a completely parallel system that's by and for the people, and that is already happening all over the country. Right. I mean, this is just, it's already happening. So to be able to create a voice for it, to be able to, I mean, the same way to occupy Wall Street, to be able to begin to coalesce what this movement is in, I mean, all over the place happening and bring it together. That's what I think where the excitement comes. So I agree. I don't think it's necessarily to bring in the corporations or venture capitalists, because that's a system that has a completely different way of thinking about all things. And they're not going to do it one way or another if it doesn't sort of meet their bottom line. And our bottom lines are completely different. So they're almost like entirely to look at that realistically and say, well, how do you really do that in the marketplace? I think what we're talking is sort of a little bit about functioning outside the marketplace, between ourselves, for ourselves in very different ways. And so that's I'm just saying right on.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much for the call.
And thank you.
Oh, thanks. Thank Keep you. Listening. Thanks a lot, Harriet. I think that, I think it's a great idea to have it sort of grow as it is growing. But at the same time, I do worry that it's going to be continually tarred with that elitist.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing
we want to talk about. Yeah,
like definitely our movement is inherently non-hierarchical. It's, the voice of the people. We are not about blaming anybody. I think when corporate food is spending billions and billions of dollars a year on marketing, people don't have an opportunity to understand anything else, and I would never blame them for choosing the foods that they choose. I would never blame a farmer in the middle of America for not understanding that, you know, something has gone awry with the food system when, you know, the average age of the farmers out there is in the 50s across America, in fact. And I think we need to continue, like, to sort of sustain this movement in a non-hierarchical, non-blaming sense of, you know, the people. Like, we're all in this together.
Yeah, I mean, and just like Occupy Wall Street, they've basically set up an entire city down there because they're like, okay, our city isn't working. Let's create a new city.
Exactly.
And so if Occupy Big Food can do the same thing, let's create, you know, a parallel system, distributing food, teaching people about food, you know, inspiring people to become farmers and, like, really get this out there for everyone. Let's take that route, because, like, we're not going to be able to do it within the system. It's just not happening. We've been trying.
You know, the thing that troubles me about this, and, you know, I, of course, I'm deeply on your side, but I keep going back to the the way the system is set up is the way that the entire nation is used to procuring their food. And when you change that, or when you try to change that, I really see that there'll be a great schism between the people who quote-unquote get it and the rest of the people who really, frankly, don't give a shit. And there's millions of people like that. And it's how to address those people. It's how to bring that body into the sort of discussion.
Is it that they don't give a shit, or is it that they don't know?
They don't know. There's so
That's
much
my
of
take on it.
I actually think people don't care that much.
I disagree.
I think a lot of people do not care.
I disagree.
Care because they don't know. They don't care because they don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
I don't think that, I'm not buying that people are so dumb they don't know that McDonald's is not a good thing to eat three
times
a day.
I didn't know until I was 22 and moved to France. I ate McDonald's every day until I was 22. I had no idea it was bad for me. My parents didn't tell me. My sister didn't tell me. My community didn't tell me. I was told every day in a marketing ad that McDonald's was great and beautiful and happy and fun. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and that's the only fucking education I had. Excuse my language.
Yeah, don't drop the F-bomb.
So
I have to second that. Same here before I worked with Heritage.
Is that right, Joe?
Thank you. It's
completely
true.
Completely uneducated on food.
Completely unaware.
And
middle American, middle class, you know, white right. kids. You
right. know? And people even think that certain foods at McDonald's are healthy. This is how deep the marketing actually
works. Well, those two apple slices,
work.
Kristen, are you telling me those aren't healthy?
I am telling you those aren't healthy.
Fact.
I'm really sorry. But I do know a friend of my husband the other day came back to lunch with a McDonald's sandwich, and his other friend said, wait, I thought you were like all into health food. And he's like, no, this is healthy. I just got a grilled chicken on a bun. You know, this is how deep this marketing is working. I mean, there's probably like 70 ingredients in just the bun. Never mind the chicken that's been pumped full of antibiotics and hormones.
But how do you know?
Right, and he doesn't know.
There's opacity. There's no clarity on these things.
Do you think that we could force more transparency within these industries? I know, for instance, that, I mean, I'm really into the meatpacking industry.
Yeah.
I love the meat industry. I don't know why, but I do. So I've read a lot of stuff about it. I've met with them. I went on a tour of a Cargill plant. I was like one of the only journalists in 20 years to ever be in this plant. And the Cargill folks are very much aware of consumer concern about where their cows are coming from, their cattle are coming from, and how they're processed. And so they are creating new systems that create more transparency within their industry, and they're hoping that other companies will follow their lead, and I certainly do too. And I applaud them for doing it. I think it's great that they're making these steps. It costs them a lot of money. They don't have to do it. They really don't.
What are they doing?
They have third-party audio video monitoring. Or excuse me, third-party video monitoring. In other words, they have cameras set up throughout the plant that are continuously monitored by a third party so that whenever there is an infraction, it's brought to the attention, the line is stopped, and whatever it is that happens is corrected. That's big bucks. They don't have to do this. There's no legislation forcing them.
I think they have a lot of money.
They do, but they don't have to do this, is my point. There's no legislation forcing them to do this. They're doing this because consumer awareness has been brought to bear on how many recalls and how dirty our meat supply is and so on and so forth.
But isn't that like a Band-Aid on a big gaping wound that is the factory meat industry?
Yeah, but I don't know how you would change the factory meat industry. How would you produce as much meat?
Well, people need to stop eating as much meat as we're eating.
Okay, say that all we want. People should stop eating this. People should stop eating that. But the fact is, people won't because they want it. They want to eat meat, and this is happening all over the third world. You've seen that. The statistics for how much third world less developed countries, as they develop and develop a better economy, they're eating more and more meat. They're following the American model. It's what people want to do. And unless you can offer some sort of incredible alternative to that.
Well, we were talking about this a little bit, just as far as like taste manipulation goes, mm-hmm. and the way the American public is like so inherently steeped in this like chemical, certain like meat, salty, savory, sweet taste issue. And once I think people, you know, once I think there are more choices, literally more, interesting foods to eat, more healthy foods, then the palate changes, the desire changes, everything changes.
Yeah.
It overturns itself. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. There's nothing like, you know,
no.
it's not to say like Americans are going to stop eating, you know, meat tomorrow, but this is a slow change. This is an uproot.
Yeah.
Well, I think it is. I think it's a young generation's. I think it's your generation's mandate. This is your job to make this happen.
Yeah, yeah. And absolutely.
Because I will be long dead from chemical additives.
It's not your fault.
No, it's not my fault. We only have about 3 minutes left. I have one burning question, and this is a question that I ask almost everybody that comes in these studios. Home ec.
Oh, yeah. Bring it back, man.
Absolutely.
Bring it back. But bring back real food, home ec. I don't want to be cooking. I remember when I was cooking like
quick
cinnamon
foods in the microwave.
Yeah. We need to teach people to cook real healthy food from scratch.
Gas stoves. Yeah,
gas stoves. Yeah.
No, Kristen and I were actually we were talking about this, and I mean, one of the things that's going to be so vital. I mean, we were both really into Foucault, and we were just, you know, actually both reading the History of Sexuality again, and there's this like emphasis on like self care and an idea of like how important it is to, you know, be aware of yourself and your own body and your own mind so that like you can give that to the world that you're in. I mean, yeah. I think like also if we are at all interested in the environment, then the kids that we're teaching today need to understand how food ties into that.
Yeah.
And they need to understand how to eat it.
Yeah. And, you know, on that sort of same tip is that when you control the food supply, you literally control bodies when you think about it. You're mm-hmm. altering bodies, you're altering palates, you're altering taste preferences. I mean, it's a really deep control. So
very deep.
We need to educate people just on that alone, you know, and yeah. starting to change these palates.
We absolutely. Love home ec.
We have one more minute. So, yeah, I love home ec too. And I'm launching a one-woman campaign to bring home ec back right. into the public school system. But ladies, let us tell people where they can find yeah. out more about Occupy Corporate Food or, Occupy Big Food.
Yeah, we just started a blog. It's occupybigfood.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's Occupy Big Food. We have a Facebook page.
Yep, and we have an email address, occupybigfood@gmail.com.
Very good. And Kristen, your articles, and specifically the one you were just referring to yeah, that was in the Huffington Post.
You can find it on my blog, which is kristinwartman.wordpress.com.
How do you spell your name, honey?
KristinWartman.wordpress.com. Everything's all compiled there.
And so, folks, if you're interested in trying again to visit with the Occupy Big Food Rally, maybe next week, maybe later, stay in touch with all of these various social media outlets. This has been episode number 4, I think, of Straight No Chaser. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer. Thanks very much to my guests, Erica Lede and Kristen Wartman.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jack, Katie. My intrepid friend and producer. And I'll see you next week with Alex Prudhomme and The Ripple Effect, talking all about water.
This HeritageRadioNetwork.com program was brought to you by Fairway Market. You can find all of our programs on iTunes by searching the iTunes store for Heritage Radio Network. You can also find all of our programs archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, as well as a calendar of live shows. Thanks again for tuning in. Following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.